last week on Jack Unmasked.
Cheevers and Cashman. Cashman was hitting the ball, and he was slicing it every time. And you said, well, Mr. Cashman, could I give you a little bit of advice on your swing?
Oh, yeah.
How much do I owe you for that? Cheevers had to have his big cigar.
His lower back bothers him all the time. He's in pain constantly.
Cheevers looks at me, and he says, is it ever quiet here? Cost him $50 for a cigar. Emil Francis Shepherd, Sam Richards, Colin Colburn, and Sherry Anderson. He managed New York Rangers. Emil Francis used to play baseball in Delisle.
Do you remember Cashman's speech?
No, I don't. Do you?
I was a Boston Bruin my whole career. I played 24 years for the Boston Bruins. 2 Stanley Cups. Was 1972 when we beat the Russians.
Plain truth, what he said. It was a fact of life. It was just the way it was.
Well, welcome to the Jack Norris Podcast. We like to call it Jack Unmasked. Hockey stories from the 60s and 70s. Proudly brought to you by the Simply Grounded Coffee Gallery in downtown Delisle. We hope you enjoy reminiscing about hockey as much as we do. So, without further ado, let's chat with Jack. All right, well, we got Jackson back on the line here. Jack, how are things down there today?
Well, it's not very nice today. It's raining and it's cool and not too nice and windy. And my son down here is golfing, but can have it because I'm just the pickup guy today just to relieve him when he's done. So he can have it because it's pretty cold and windy out there.
Like cold and windy, like up here, like 35 below cold or like?
No, not quite that cold, but it's about 58 degrees down here, which is cool.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's not too bad. Cold for you guys.
Yeah.
So last week we had a good chat about the event that we had that was actually all caused because of the trade, because you got to beat Cashman and Cheevers. So we had a really good story about that. And this week we're going to get into the Chicago riots when you were involved with that big trade, got moved over to Chicago. But before we get into the actual riots there, you know, right now a lot of teams and players, and let's just say especially kids, are in playoff hockey. What I was kind of thinking would be pretty neat is, what would your individual coaches that you had back in the day before a big playoff game like this, what do you think, you know, would be their message that they would be sending to the team? So, for example, the first coach you had was in Boston was Milty Schmidt. What do you think Milt Schmidt would say before a big game like this?
Well, in Boston, theory there was you got to hit. If you don't hit, you're not playing the Bruins style. When you get out for the first shift, you watched Lucic the other night if Edmonton was playing against Phoenix here. And he went out, and the first shift, he hit two guys like boom, boom. Well, he's from Boston. That's his way of knowing what to do. And that was Boston's way of playing the game. They went out, and they hit, hit, hit. When I was in Montreal, they go out, and their theory was skate, skate, skate. You got to really pour the coal on and outskate the other team and be in better shape. And they never really would hit you unless they got hit 100 times, and then they may start hitting back, but they weren't good at it.
That had been Claude Riel in Montreal then, right?
Yeah. So I guess it just depended who you were, what team you played for, and what style you're playing in. But the Bruins have always been big and tough.
Yeah. What do you think Billy Ray in Chicago, what would he say?
Well, he had some finesse players like Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita and, you know, Doug Moens and guys like that. And, you know, he really didn't stress hitting too much, but, you know, he believed in it. He didn't just believe skate like Bobby Hull. He'd want him never get hit if he could work that way. But I remember one night John Ferguson took a run at Hull in the playoffs. We were playing against the Canadians in the semifinals one year. And I was on Chicago's team, a spare goalie, that night. And I remember Fergie going all the way across the ice and hitting Hull with his elbow in the mouth and really cut him bad. And the fight broke out and everything else. But Fergie was paid to do that. He was their tough guy, and nobody else on the team was tough. But Teddy Harris was on defense. He was tough. So they had a few guys that could go. They had big defense.
Yeah.
They could go, but it's just that's the style they played.
And then in Edmonton, when you actually moved to the WHA, and we'll talk about that at some other point there, but that was the first time that you actually had your own goaltender coach.
Yeah.
Who was that, and what would he say?
It was Glenn Hall. He was hired to coach me. Ray Kanasiewicz was the main coach of that team, and he talked to me one day about what did I think about having a coach, and I said, well, I think it's a great idea. I've never had one before, so I think it'd be a great idea to help get, you know, keep my game sharp. So he said, like, who would you like? And I said, well, I don't know who's available. He said, well, he says, Glenn Hall just lives out here a little ways. I bet you he would come. And I said, oh, Glenn would be great. He's my idol. I said, I've always idolized him. So he agreed to come in and coach me. And he used to come down after every period and sit in the dressing room and sit beside me for 5 minutes. And if I had a goal scored, he would talk about it, or he would talk about the play of the game, how it was going and how if I was doing good or bad or whatever. So he just kind of simplified my game for me, made it way simpler than I could possibly do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And he would say before maybe a big game, he would say, what would he say, like watch the clock or something, or what was his line?
His theory all the time was when you're out there playing was to watch the clock and simplified your game a lot. It kind of broke it up into little sections of 5 minutes. Like the first 5 minutes, he says, you don't want them to score a goal because he says that can make or break a game. Or the last 5 minutes, you don't want them to score because that can tie the game or they can get ahead. So he said, always really bear down the first five and the last five. Then the middle portion, watch the clock. And then that simplifies your game a lot. So.
And the last coach you had was when you were in Phoenix, you had Sandy Huckle, and he was pretty interesting, wasn't he?
Well, Sandy Huckle was, I thought, a good coach. He was the player's kind of guy.
Oh, yeah. And Sandy had a theory. What was Sandy's theory on the game of hockey?
Sandy's theory was one man forecheck and two men back.
Yep.
That was always the way we started the game off. Always have two men back. He says, right now, you've got 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
Before the game even starts, you've got 1 point. Because the game's tied. And he said, if you can maintain that score, 0-0, he says, that's good. Because we never, ever had great teams. Sandy had to work with kind of poorer players. But he could try to get the most out of them. And then towards the end of the game, he would maybe, if we were down a goal, he would send two men in forecheck and one man back.
Yeah.
And kind of open the game up a little bit on our end. But that's where you had to be, as a goaltender, you had to be right on your game. Because I knew that was going to happen. And then we had more chances to score and whatever. So that's the way Sandy always coached.
And I always thought it was interesting that, you know, you kind of start the game off. We've got 1 point already. Let's not just give it up.
Yep.
Play kind of smart and play hard. But at the same breath, let the kind of game develop and then move from there. Like you say, you guys were an expansion team for the most part, so you didn't have like all the big talent you did in Chicago.
You know, I liked him. He was a good coach. I liked playing for Sandy, and he was good. He was played my kind of game, but he wanted a hard-nosed game. He wanted every shift, work your hardest, just go out and work, and get off the ice and just get a quick change. And that was his theory, was just to work hard, outwork the other oppositions. And you know, if you worked extra hard for 60 minutes, you would usually come out on top.
Yeah, it's funny sort of how that hard work is not the first thing that's brought up in sports nowadays.
No, it's not. But it's, you know, I think a lot of guys, if they haven't got the talent, I don't know what they would do for a theory. I watched Edmonton another night here, and you know what? There's a lot of guys that did not do anything. Like, I mean, big name guys that just didn't do a darn thing. And it's too bad because they've got a lot of talent there, but they can just get it out of them, but they're not getting it.
No, they're not. They're not, are they?
No.
So let's go to the actual story that we're going to talk about here today. 1968, the Chicago riots. Tell us why they started, what kind of eventually sort of happened, and how this affected you guys as the Chicago Blackhawks.
It's all African-American around the rink.
Yep.
You go to that rink, it's all African-American that work in there, and they treated us like we're gods because we were the big name Chicago Blackhawks, and Bobby Hull come up, they would just like die when they met Bobby Hull because they're just poor people in that area. And we used to have a guard at our gate where we'd come in at the back of the rink and drive our car up to this gate. And you had to pay, I think in those days it was $300 or $500 we had to pay for security for the whole year for our car. Then they defended it well. Like they would make sure nobody went near your car and it's inside of a fence, but they can jump the fence if they want to, but they wouldn't let anybody in there. If they ever jumped the fence to get in, boy, they'd put the run on you so fast.
First of all, I was just going to let everybody know, these riots in 1968 started because Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Yeah, probably was, yeah.
And there was riots all across the United States, but Chicago, Washington, and Detroit were particularly bad. I just kind of looked it up just for, because most people won't even know that they're aware of it, but there was 11 people killed, 90 policemen injured, 2,100 people arrested. 2 miles of the city were left in a state of rubble.
Yeah.
It was basically, they were burning everything. There were 125 fires that they burned down the library. 210 buildings were damaged and rioted. Like, there was a 28 block stretch that was that was damaged.
Well, there you go.
The mayor actually put out the authority to shoot anybody that had a Molotov cocktail in his hand.
Oh, probably so. Yeah.
Like, it was serious, wasn't it?
It's a long time ago, but I don't remember little details of what really happened, but I know I remember about the parking thing.
Yep.
Also, too, when we went into the rink, all the National Guard was there, and that's all the guard people of the whole, you know, whatever they are.
The Illinois National Guard.
Yeah, and so they were sleeping in Chicago Stadium, and the games were canceled, of course. There's no games on, because nobody would come, because you couldn't come into that area.
Oh, yeah.
The National Guard were all sleeping in the Chicago Stadium. So we'd go in for practice there, and we'd walk in back door. And as soon as you walk into the place, you're walking by all these National Guard guys, and they're looking at you like you're a god, because they knew we were with the Hawks, because they knew practice was coming up. So and then you'd walk down the room, get all dressed up, then you come out up the 21 steps that I talked about before onto the ice surface, and there's about 5 to 10,000 people sitting in the seats, all cheering.
At practice.
When Bobby Hull comes on the ice, they're all just like, hey, ho, ho, woo, ho, and Makita and all this, and they were just so excited. And so when practice started, like, it was like a game, for goodness sake. Like, they were so pumped up, and Hull would get the puck coming down the ice, and you're the goalie, and he winds up with a big shot, and he'd let her rip and go over top of my head or something. They'd all be cheering and hollering, yay, and everything else. It was pretty sad, but you know what? That was the way they were, so...
Oh, yeah.
I remember one night Dennis DeGiordi, and he left the rink, and he was stopped at a light, and somebody come up and opened up his door and ripped his pocket off his pants and took his wallet, took off running. So what do? Do you run after the guy, or you're gonna get pretty hard to run after him because
he's
out of town? So
that's right.
Lots of things like that happened. But those guys that ran that parking lot, they just treated us like we were just like a god. They just admired us, and we all paid up front, and so it was good, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Do you remember, like, how long did it actually last for?
No, I don't. I would think the National Guard are probably in there for a week. I don't know for sure. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I know they're in there for quite a while. I know the games are all canceled at that time. We never had any games in Chicago. We probably had them on the road wherever there's no...
Yeah.
It was pretty serious business there.
Oh, for sure. Like, they had 10,500 police that were sent in, 6,700 Illinois National Guard troops sent in, and 5,000 soldiers.
There you go.
So there was 22,000 basically police and soldiers.
Yeah.
Covering that area, mostly, you know, where the rink is, because it was, you know, in specific areas that this was happening, right? That's a lot of soldiers and police to come in and, you know, take care of the situation.
And you had stops everywhere you're going along, and there'd be stops. Lots of places where you couldn't get through, they'd stop you and say, what are you doing here? And say, well, I'm with the Hawks. And they say, well, okay, and you can continue on. But if you were not practicing or nothing like that, had no reason to be there, they wouldn't let you in.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's crazy that actually happened. I don't think most people could actually fathom how bad it would have been at that time.
Well, it was bad. I mean, I was a skinny kid from Delisle, Saskatchewan. I never knew of things like that happening. And all of a sudden, you're right involved in the whole thing. And
mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting when you're right there and you're part of it. You know, you're kind of a celebrity there and trying to keep up the name of the Hawks. But you know, that new rink right now is Kitty Corner from the old one, and that's right across the Kitty Corner. And the new rink was built there. All that was all businesses before and just old, you know, creepy old buildings. So that was all torn out, and then the old Chicago Stadium was ripped down. So now I don't know what it is now. Maybe it's businesses. I don't know what it is, but it's gone.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad you shared that story, because honestly, I didn't even know about it. I don't think we ever talked about that story. And so I kind of, when I got looking into it, I'm like, yeah, this was pretty serious.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it'd been like to actually live in that city. And actually, your practice is right in the heart of where there's problems, right?
Yeah. It was right dead center.
Yeah. I mean, imagine you probably felt fairly protected having 6,700 National Guard there at practices, but still.
I felt pretty safe when they were all there. They all had big rifles and everything else, so I felt pretty safe.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
How about for next week? You had mentioned, you know, when Bobby Hull was coming in at practice, you know, ripping some slap shots by you. And so there was a time when I think you were actually back in Boston playing an exhibition game. against Chicago that you had an incident with Bobby Hull, didn't you?
Yes, it was actually the first time I ever met Bobby Hull, and it's quite a story. So I think we can probably talk about that next week and make a good story. Quite interesting.
Let's just put it this way. Back in the day, you weren't wearing a mask and you were going against Bobby Hull. Is that fair enough to say what we're going to talk about next week?
That's a good start, yeah.
Okay, well, let's do that story then next week, Jackson.
Okay, we'll talk about it next week.
Okay, thanks for everything.
See you then.
Bye. Well, that ends episode 6 of Jack Unmasked, where Jack experiences one of the most dangerous situations in American history with the 1968 Chicago riots, but turns that experience into a practice that he will never forget, with over 6,700 of the Illinois National Guard protecting them, watching them, and carrying on as the Chicago Blackhawks practice. If you'd like to be notified of the next upcoming podcast, which comes out every Friday, go to www.nccag.ca. Click on the podcast tab, enter your email, click subscribe, and you'll be notified of the next podcast. Until we talk to you next week, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
In Boston, theory there was you got a hit. In Montreal, they go out, and their theory was skate, skate, skate. Remember Fergie going all the way across the ice and hitting Hull with his elbow in the mouth and really cut him bad. Glenn Hull, he was hired to coach me. He used to come down after every period and sit in the dressing room and sit beside me. Sandy's theory was one man forecheck and two men back. Right now, you've got 1 point.
1968, the Chicago riots.
The National Guard were all sleeping in the Chicago Stadium. 5,000 to 10,000 people sitting in the seats, all cheering, just like, hey, ho, ho, ooh, ho. And so when practice started, like, it was like a game, for goodness sake. I would think the National Guard are probably in there for a week. I know the games were all canceled at that time. It was pretty serious business there. And I was a skinny kid from Delisle, Saskatchewan. I never knew of things like that happening. I felt pretty safe when they were all there. They all had big rifles and everything else.